Reading this morning from the last verse of chapter 4, canto 1, chapter 4, and then the beginning parts of chapter 5, up through text 9, up through text 8. So chapter 4 is entitled Appearance of Narada. This whole narration is in response to the questions asked at the beginning of chapter 4. Shaunaka, in a very enthusiastic spirit, Sutta, Sutta, Mahabaho, he wants to hear more. They ask 6 questions. They got 6 wonderful answers. Now he wants to hear more. He wants to hear about how the 3 things, how the Bhagavatam appeared. He wants to hear about the qualifications of the speaker of the Bhagavatam, namely Shukadeva Goswami. And he wants to hear about the qualifications of the receiver, Maharaj Parikshit. So Sutta chooses to address the question about the appearance of the Bhagavatam, and he does it by he does that first. The first canto is addressing those 3 questions and other things, but starts with how the Bhagavatam appeared. So how the Bhagavatam appeared is the qualifications of Vyasa are described. His ashram on the banks of the river Saraswati in the northern region, and one day sitting down by the side of the river, fixed in trance upon the Supreme, he saw the conditions of the age of Kali, and it was so abhorrent, he then felt what many sadhus would do. He thought, what can I do to assist the situation, make the situation uplifted? So then he decided to compile the 4 Vedas from the 1, the 5th Veda from the remaining verses, and entrusted those verses or those Vedas to different disciples to preserve, and then was reflecting on everything, having completed that work. And he was feeling dissatisfaction, in fact despondency, and was very surprised. That was internally what was his state. So then he began to ponder why, and Narada arrived. The last verse of the chapter is text 33, chapter 4. At the auspicious arrival of Sri Narada, Sri Vyasadeva got up respectfully and worshipped him, giving him veneration equal to that given to Brahmaji, the creator. Oh. Brahmaji just happens to be the father and spiritual master of Narada, who is his spiritual master. So he's treating Narada like he would treat the father of Narada, or creator of the universe. In the purport, Prabhupada mentions that Brahma is referred to as Vidhi, V-I-D-H-I, same as like regulation, Vidhi. The Vidhis of Sadhana Bhakti. So, the system was Brahma received knowledge directly from Lord Vishnu. Then Brahma in turn instructed those teachings to Narada. Narada in turn instructed those to Vyas. And here we have this, so it's very, very early in the line of succession. Brahma, being the father of all regulations in bhakti, is the standard of how he's to be respected, and his representative, Narada, is respected in the same way. So chapter 5 begins Narada's instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam. Narada smiling, seeing Vyas in his disconsolate condition, raises the question. Now, addressing Vyasadeva, the son of Parashara, Narada inquired, "Are you satisfied by identifying the body and the mind as objects of self-realization?" Like, tongue in cheek, you're a transcendentalist. Just like our discussion yesterday, in the same language, object, subject, and if the object is the body and the mind, is one going to be satisfied? Our topic was, can you have a factual relationship with someone else if you think they're somebody that they're not? Can there be any real satisfaction in that? Or here it's in terms of the objects of realization or self-realization. Prabhupada writes that this is a hint what the problem was. And then anything said further is just an expansion of that core notion. It's a similar line as chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is speaking to Arjuna that all of the principles of virtue that you're describing, that you described earlier, they're very nice, but towards what end? Goodness, ethics, morality, and so forth should be applied towards the well-being of the soul. That's the standard. And if there isn't a proper conception of the self as the spiritual entity beyond the body, then ethical values will be misapplied. You miss the target. You won't be satisfied. So, Vyas is being pointed in that direction also. Now, how is it possible for Vyas to miss that point? Our understanding is he was put in that position specifically so that like Arjuna being put in the position of not knowing such a fundamental thing as you're not this body. So for our edification, so Narada can speak on this topic. Prabhupada writes, being a great son of a great father, he should not have identified the self with the body or the mind. Ordinary men with a poor fund of knowledge can identify the body as self or the mind as self, but Vyasadeva should not have done so. One cannot be cheerful by nature unless one is factually seated in self-realization, which is transcendental to the material body and mind. So there's a series of verses that are with very short purport, so mainly read the verses. Narada continues, your inquiries were full, and your studies were also well fulfilled. And there is no doubt that you have prepared a great and wonderful work, the Mahabharata, which is full of all kinds of Vedic sequences, elaborately explained. You have fully delineated the subject of impersonal Brahman, as well as the knowledge derived therefrom. Why should you be despondent? In spite of all this, thinking that you are undone, my dear Prabhu. Prabhupada's comment in the purport is obvious, that if the author of Vedanta Sutra is feeling despondent, what to speak of the reader? He writes, Vedanta Sutra covers the subject of eternity, and the methods are scholarly. So there cannot be any doubt about the transcendental scholarship of Vyas. So why should he lament? Vyas's reply, in essence, is, I don't know, but you must know. You're in touch with the Supreme Lord. You're so intimately associated with the Supreme Lord, you're like Super Soul himself. Can you tell me? Sri Vyasa said, all you have said about me is perfectly correct. Despite all this, I am not pacified. I therefore question you about the root cause of my dissatisfaction. For you are a man of unlimited knowledge due to your being the offspring of Brahma, who is self-born. My Lord, everything that is mysterious is known to you, because you worship the creator and destroyer of the material world and the maintainer of the spiritual world, the original personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to the three modes of nature. And that's, we're also trying to worship Krishna, but we don't quite have that qualification. But that's by the path of worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confidentiality in that relationship grows, everything that is known to be known can be known. Everything to be known can be known, that is, by disclosure through confidential relationship. Prabhupada writes, a person who is 100% engaged in the service of the Lord is the emblem of all knowledge. It's not because, you know, they're because of scholarship. It's because of relationship. The intimacy of relationship with the Supreme. Such a devotee of the Lord in full perfection of devotional service is also perfect by the qualification of the personality of Godhead. So, what to speak of knowledge? Prabhupada is indicating the mystic powers. They become decorations of the devotee. Like Narada, he could travel anywhere. Who can do that? Plan an instrument and sing names of the Lord and zoom, zoom, there you go throughout the universe. Anywhere in this material and even into the spiritual realm. Narada has such freedom. So it's descending empowerment that makes the devotee so qualified. And Vyasa is recognizing that Narada has that, first of all, the devotional qualification, and following the devotional qualification, the empowerment qualification. Like the sun, your goodness can travel in everywhere in the three worlds. And like the air, you can penetrate the inner region of everyone. As such, you are as good as the all-pervasive Supersoul. Please, therefore, find out the deficiency in me. Despite my being absorbed in transcendence, under disciplinary regulations and vows. So, now both have pointed out there's not deficiency on Vyasa's part as far as eligibility or qualification. Still he's feeling despondent. So here's this, the first verse, which is where we're going to end. Narada's response. So, remember before the hint that was given was misidentification of the self with the body. Are you satisfied by identifying with the body or mind as the objects of self-realization? So, the converse of that, or the flip side of that, is, Narada says, you have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. That philosophy, which does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord, is considered worthless. Darshanam kilam. And word for word, it's kilam is inferior. And minus Krishna, what's minus Krishna? So this is a it's an important verse in that it's giving us the whole section is giving us the foundation of why the Srimad Bhagavatam is so important, contrasted with other high teachings, meritorious teachings, teachings of value, teachings of ethics, and so forth and so on, that in Kali Yuga they're just absent. But even if they're present, it's still inferior or doesn't make it, doesn't reach the mark. Bhagavatam, even in Kali Yuga, wants to bring us to the topmost conception, because when we connect with that topmost conception or the personality of Godhead in devotion, all of the other lesser things are accomplished. Conversely, pile up so many of the lesser qualifications and it's kilam or inferior or in stronger language useless. I want to spend a little bit of read Prabhupada's explanation in the purport and then share with you a little bit about the bridge preaching conference of this weekend, because the Bridge Preaching Conference was a discussion about how to principles behind, or the vision behind, reaching people where you're not just giving them a Bhagavatam class or just the our direct nine processes of bhakti, somehow reaching people in some manner where on their path, they've gone this far, they have this kind of interest, to meet them there and then take them through association further. Bridge preaching. And where it might fail, where it might work, what principles need to be there. Because the language is very clear. Prabhupada in the purport is stating, first, the living entity by constitution is part and parcel of the Supreme. basic. And as such, his position is to serve the Supreme, also basic. The Lord has expanded himself as living beings in order to accept loving service from them, and this alone can satisfy both the Lord and the living beings. Very important sentence. Why do living beings exist? Like, why do we exist? We've been expanded by the personality of Godhead in order to receive, for him to receive service. It's Prabhupada explained the same thing in slightly different language, that the Lord is complete. So whatever can exist, exists in him. And part of his expansiveness, unlimitedness, is tiny fragments of himself. And the purpose of those fragments of himself is to increase his pleasure. He's rasa. Rasa vaisaha. So he knows how to enjoy. He enjoys through variegated methods and means. One of those variegated methods and means, of course, in addition to the spiritual sky and his loving associates, eternal associates, there's living entities that are his parts and parcels that are now gone astray, and their purpose for existence, like, you know, why the Lord expands them, is to reciprocate loving dealings with them. And in that way, the living entities are happy and the Lord is happy. This alone can satisfy both. So, where does happiness lie? It's a state reverse. Happiness lies in the living entities acting in that relationship in a loving manner. And anything other than that, what's other than that? Gently, it's inferior. And stronger is useless. Or, in the language of the Chaturshloki verses, it's Maya. And we have our ISKCON way of saying, oh, Prabhu, that's Maya. But Maya literally means that which is not. We would discuss this in the Bridge Preaching Conference, because there are different ideas of how to, you know, seeing value in what people are doing, and at least for myself, that discussion ended in the following way: we can value the fact that here is something in someone's path towards Krishna or away from Krishna, here's something that indicates a reciprocation from Krishna with them. There's something in their life that's important to them. Whatever that is, ultimately has its relationship with Krishna, so they're on this path toward Krishna. So we can honor and respect that. However, standing on its own, it has no value. It's maybe too subtle a point for some people to deal with, and in that case, they should be very careful. But recognizing that all things that have value, the value is in its relation with the Supreme and not otherwise. Otherwise, it's just a reflection. It's insubstantial. It's Maya. It's illusion. It's Kila. It's inferior. It's worthless. And all those seeming harsh, condemning words. And when we're harsh and condemning, if that's the disposition that we're in, That's egotism. It's not the compassion of a Vaishnav. But at the same time, a Vaishnav must be discriminating. So the discrimination must be, this is reality, that's illusion. And but help connect that which is the reflection only, again, to Krishna. That's bridge preaching. Somehow find a way that persons who have an interest in something that's related to Krishna, but they don't see the relation to Krishna, so this is where one of the topics, like the subtle topics that got discussed again and again, there has to be some, not just strategic showing interest, but some actual care about the person and their position and the thing that they value. If it's just strategic, like, you know, with no real care and concern and compassion, it doesn't bode well, or it's fraud. It's deception. It's disgenuine, less strong. And if we're going to involve ourselves with others who are not practicing Vaishnavas, the concern for them should be genuine. Although their conceptions may be, as far as they're looking out at the world, Maya. They're not seeing the connection with Krishna. So we have to, this delicate balance of recognizing they hold this to be a value, like what Krishna did with Arjuna. Your virtue is wonderful. Same as what Narada is doing with Vyas. Look at all these qualifications you have, Vyas. So he didn't say, you know, this is useless, that's useless, this is useless. But it must be connected with glorification of the Supreme. So that has to be in the heart of the devotee, because we can't abandon that, or we're in Maya. So our value is transcendence. Our value is recognizing and being of service to others, to also recognize there's a reason for our existence. We're created or expanded by the personality of Godhead for loving relationships to be reciprocated mutually. Very explicit here in the purport. So, once again, whatever is out there in the world that we're encountering, persons have values in different things. Something means something to them. It's important to them. And if we just, you know, direct attention away from something that's what's important to them, they're not going to have an interest. So, what's important to them? I'll share this. Several speakers were pointing out their understanding of modern audience, especially young people, is social activism and human rights. And practically doing something towards those ends. They're bringing about some change or adding value in the matter of making a stand, doing something. You know, some examples that were given, and I've encountered this just recently. You know, some of the students at Penn State, they're going to their program. One's going off to Peace Corps, the president of the club in Washington University, no, University of Washington in Seattle. He was so excited sharing with me that he just yesterday, you know, the day before we had our program, was starting his garden. Devamrita Swami was sharing that they have a little place near one of the colleges in Auckland, and they have some brahmacharis based there out of, in a house, and they go out and do sankirtan. So one of them had an interest in gardening, so he started a garden, and the garden was so fantastic that students started coming over and volunteering to help in the garden. And it was of such interest that the university wrote an article about their garden. And then the town approached them and said, "You're doing such a wonderful garden, we'd like to give you a piece of land to make a garden." Because we tried community projects of gardening, and because the New Zealand is the number, according to Maharaj, the number one country in ecology orientation in the world, and Sweden is number two. So the city or the place where the college is, they wanted to promote, but they couldn't find a community garden project that was successful. But they came by and saw all these students were out in the garden. As an example of the level of concern that people have in doing something that's, however it may be small, just like doing something. And Radhika Raman was speaking the same thing about, you know, from the academia. When he's teaching as a professor in the area of Hinduism, the questions people are asking, they're not just interested in, you know, how does reincarnation work and the soul and the travel of the soul and this and that. They want to know how is this understanding going to be transmitted into practical action to make a better world. It's the mindset. Very action-oriented, social change-oriented, value-in-society-oriented. And if we want to capture the hearts as well as the minds, then we need practical activity for people to do, or, you know, yeah. Something that can add value to lives. We need to connect that kind of spirit to this message. The message is that living entities are meant for serving the personality of Godhead in loving reciprocation. That's their reason for existence. I'll read the sentence again. The Lord has expanded Himself as living beings in order to accept loving service from them, and this alone can satisfy both the Lord and the living beings. Such a simple sentence. Direct. Such a scholar as Vyas has completed many expansions of Vedic literature, ending with Vedanta philosophy, but none of them have been written directly glorifying the personality of Godhead. Dry philosophical speculations, even on the transcendental subject of the Absolute, have very little attraction without directly dealing with the glorification of the Lord. So the glorification of the Lord. Later on in this chapter, the text 22, where Narada is speaking about their various departments of knowledge in the purport is, you know, science and anthropology and literature and architecture and so many different branches, they're meant for the glorification of the Lord. So that's an action. How can we bring things that people have a spirit to do to the level of glorification of the Lord. Genuinely connect with what their interest is. See that connection of that interest with the real spirit of a living being. That is a loving relationship with the Lord. The compiler of Vedanta Darshan is Vyasadeva himself. Yet he is troubled, although he is the author. So what sort of transcendental bliss can be derived by the readers and listeners of Vedanta, which is not explained directly by Vyas, the author? So there are, what Prabhupada is pointing here is there are Vedantists that are expounding on Vedanta. So, if they continue, his point is, if they continue in the same direction as Vedanta Sutra itself, that is, minus the direct glorification of the Supreme Lord, what transcendental bliss can be derived from that? What satisfaction can be derived from that? If there isn't satisfaction, how one can continue? Or why won't you even take it up? So the attention is going in the opposite direction. That which directly glorifies the Supreme Lord and brings consciousness of the personality of Godhead, that the last word of transcendence is Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. So, last point, in this bridge preaching conference, one of the things that we don't need to do bridge preaching, is to conceal our identity. Or, you know, pretend to be what we're not. One of the devotees, Father Ramchandra, was describing his first encounter of Bhakti Tirtha Swami outside of New Vrindavan, because Bhakti Tirtha Swami was co-GBC in New Vrindavan. And what he saw of Bhakti Tirtha Swami was this, you know, dancing and kirtan and up and down and around and all over and bouncing off the walls and ecstatic for hours and hours, dancing and dancing and dancing and perspiring and just, and then sit down and give class. That was just wonderful. So that was the Bhakti Tirtha Swami that he knew. Then one time he was with his band, with a traveling Sankirtan party, and they were in the Maryland area, so they went to some program that Bhakti Tirtha Swami was giving at an Episcopal church. And, you know, his jaw hit the floor when he saw him coming in a one of his costumes. You know, it wasn't the danda carrying saffron sannyasi, it was some kind of, I forget how he described it, some kind of an outfit that was astounding. You know, very bright colored formal jacket and with an African cap on and his king's cane. And then when he got up in front of the audience, everyone was also wondering, where has this person come from? Without knowing, even in contrast, the sannyasi that Bala Ramchandra knew. But then when his words, right, the first words that he spoke were, right, you know, people might be asking, why is a person like me coming before you and here in a Lutheran church? And then he delivered his message of universal connection with the Supreme. And, you know, the dress didn't mean anything. It was the words were what connected people. Apparently, he didn't say this, but apparently it was an African-American congregation. So he was coming in as something like, you know, one of the kings of Africa.
so that they could relate to him. But his message was just a transcendental message. And they resonated with that message. But meet people on their ground but not lose your identity of what our message is. A very clear sense of self-identity and connectivity with the Supreme. At the same time, meeting people on ground that they're comfortable with, they can relate with, something that addresses what's important to them, and then genuinely care about them and their position and their values, and help connect those to the personality of Godhead and his glorification and this unity and diversity message. And the flamboyant way that Bhaktisiddhanta Swami sometimes did things is not a lot of people can do it and get away with it, but it ignores it what's recommended. But the principle here with Vyasadeva is glorify directly the personality of Godhead, not just go out and meet people where they're at and show them how their happiness can be arrived by some kind of formula, even a Vedic formula, but somehow so that they can connect with it, bring them to the position of directly glorifying the personality of Godhead with what they have, the gifts that God has given them. And then that satisfaction is very special. Okay. Hare Krishna. Comments? Questions?
As you were speaking about helping people connect to Krishna through whatever they are valuing, especially whom we meet and preach to. So often we come across people who value things which are either not favorable or completely goes counter to our fundamental principles. But at the same time, they're also showing some genuine interest, like feminism, for example, or some other ism which goes the counter way. So I've always found it difficult to balance where do I draw the line, because I want to extend that care, but then it seems like they just want to get what they want, not so much they're not able to see the care or connection to Krishna behind. So is it something that we should not put our energies into and be careful from the beginning, or do we take step by step and see if there is change in course of thinking of the other person and this way build?
Within ISKCON today, this is a hot topic. You know, the liberals and the conservatives, pizza and pakoras, those that say we have to address our audience, and those that say we can't compromise. You compromise, you lose purity, you lose the essence, you lose your connection with Prabhupada, you lose everything. And they're deeply concerned. And then take it down to the individual level of how you address yourself to
those are sentiments that are out there, and the sentiments are particularly being propagated by intellectuals. And, you know, it's humanism. It's the times in which we live, where, you know, spiritual knowledge is not in the forefront. In the absence of spiritual knowledge, exhibiting some kind of caring and support for all, like what Radhika Raman said, is when people, when he's describing, he's giving his class at the university, and they're discussing, you know, the history of Vaishnavism. He said what they're interested in primarily is things like, you know, how does this address women? Are women deliberately dismissed and just like eliminated as non-entities, or are they respected as entities and treated and revered with dignity? As if, you know, and primarily using material standards for making that evaluation. That's their interest. And if it's, you know, it's something that needs correction if it's not with dignity and respect by their standards. And certainly not something they can consider themselves being willing to seriously participate in, other than, you know, criticizing it, seeing it as part of the problem. So that's the mindset, the liberal or educated mindset. At least in our, you know, the educated audience in the West. And if they're not holding that view, they're influenced by that view to some degree. Mm. And it's not just, you know, women are of that disposition, men and women are of that disposition. I can think of three things. One of them is there's some universals that everybody likes. Kirtan and Prasadam. Mm. Another is that it's part of the view of liberalism that there is a particular tradition, I'm part of that particular tradition, and the message of this particular tradition is. In other words, this is what Radhika was saying. You preface your position with that little phrase, and it's altogether a different thing. The dialogue. You're not like, you know, a specimen to be examined. You're sharing, this is our tradition. And then why? And when the tradition, the message of the tradition goes to the transcendental platform, that as far as spirit souls are concerned, that's where equality goes. And according to our tradition, the reason behind there's differences, although there's spiritual equality, we recognize there's physical and psychological differences. Based upon the physical, psychological differences and the well-being of society overall, we respect and act according to those differences. Put the first one, kirtan and prasadam, together with the second one, and you have a relationship. Where you're being honest and they're being honest. It's like at Penn State, I was amazed to find out from Gangan Narayan, there are three main constituencies. Well, one of them is obvious. One of them is that there's an eco-friendly group. But another one is the gay and lesbian group. They're there every program. You know, the president of the club and his group. And they love kirtan. And they love prasadam. And they can hear our philosophy. And the third one is the atheist society. I mean, the president of the atheist society asked me a question at the end. And it wasn't challenging. And, you know, he comes every whatever it is, every Tuesday, every Thursday, whatever it is. Some question about is it the same relationships thing? Is it possible to have a relationship that's a pure and transcendental relationship that does not have a conception of a deity or some supreme person? Is it possible to have that? I gave him a direct answer. He didn't like, you know, and I'd huff, get up and walk out or argue or... without compromising, and this is according to the perspective of Vaishnavism, and, you know, after a certain point of time you don't need to preface with that, but the preface with that takes away the fight, or, you know, like, you know, we're enemies with one another, and you can have a discussion about that position of the Vaishnavas instead of, you know, you're having an argument with the person. He didn't make any issue of it at all. But, yeah, I'm sure he'll be there this week too. So, to gradually impact, because there's this view of history that people are a product of their times. And I forget there's a term for that. Just viewing a person as the collection of the influences of times upon a person, and thus that's who the person is. As a way of viewing lives, especially lives of great persons, like that, some scholarly way. But there's a transcendental way that says fundamentally, this is what our position is. That there are absolutes in this world, and they're not discerned by scholarship. They're discerned by descending knowledge. So within these persons that have these other views, they're products of their time. Their views are born of the influence that they're receiving from those who they're associating with. Now, how do we address that? We don't dump on them, you know, nor do we just like pretend that we don't have a different view. If the relationship is right, if there are other areas where we can exchange on, and there's, you know, it's very satisfying, you can go into this dialogue of the Vaishnava view and why we have this view. It's spirit soul. This is the position of souls, the emanations from the Supreme. And they're meant for a loving relationship. And the system of differences is created by Krishna. Shatravarnamayashrishtam. And it's for smooth functioning amongst differences. Because you don't have smooth functioning, you can have clashes. And so how do you... It's a divine system. So there's a way of respecting women without saying... And equality on the spiritual platform, but all at the same time, the respect is like this notion of protection. One idea of protection is a macho idea, and the other idea is something that you value within society. Here's why, from our perspective of Vaishnavism, well, why women are particularly valued. Value, 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 therefore respect. And in respecting, it's for those reasons, and you know the downside reasons, that you know exploitation, if that comes to pass, it becomes a big disturbance to society, not only for the person, but the whole society. So our respect is shown in this way. That may look to another person as treating as a second-class citizen, not from our perspective. One of the quotes, I've forgotten it, there was a woman who was American, who was like the head of feminism when it was just coming out, and she heard that women are treated in a bad way in India, so she went to India and personally examined and found that, whoa, if women were treated in this way all around the world, we wouldn't have a feminist movement. We'd have satisfied women. I can't remember the person's name. But in principle, I'm sure, you know, we know there's abuses of that principle in India too. But when it's observed properly, this is the form of respect that we want. On the spiritual platform, on standards that are God-given. And here's some of the reasons why. Another perspective. You know, think out of the box, man. So your question, I've been addressing that particular item, but step back and say, in principle, how do we address ourselves to people that hold views that are in opposition to the Vedic view?
Yeah, where do I draw a line, like extending care, because there is this genuine desire from my side to extend, and it appears that from their side they are looking for this love and care and all that, but then there is this block of philosophy that they have in mind, which is kind of driving their life in a different direction. And I don't know where to build the bridge. And because
I've given some principles. You know, they have to apply those principles case by case. So the abstract a bit from the position that they're holding to what's the deeper value. The deeper value is respect. So this is one way to exhibit respect. Here's another way to exhibit respect. And let's see the pluses and minuses. You go to the platform of human rights, or you know, equal rights. That's the notion of feminism, equal rights. So, you know, equal rights, does that result in equal rights, or does it result in exploitation? Does it result in children often growing up without any sense of presence of their parents, their mother, because now both parents are working? What's the result? Is there another way to get the respect that you want for know, human beings that happen to be in women's bodies. Is there another way to do it that has a more wholesome outcome? You're an engineer of social change. You want to bring about this principle. Stick with the principle and look at ways of manifesting that principle. And anyway, different ways of helping them to look at the same thing that they're concerned about it from a different angle. So many things of our modern society are just messed up, and you know, another messed up version of messed up isn't going to make the situation better. Let's look at some ancient models. You know, a lot of thoughtful people are looking at, you know, long standing tradition. And health, diet, and, you know, science, and so many things. From the social, sociological perspective, what's the sociology? What's the building block of a healthy society? And how you go to the platform of the soul and build from there. Souls are packaged differently. And what's the best way to this package, that package, to be respected? How do you exhibit that? And we have our five: cows, elderly, Brahmins, children, and women. All should be respected in a very special way. You don't say you respect the cows in the same way we respect women, or respect the Brahmins the same way we respect the children. But they're respected. And we have, it's a fundamental cornerstone of the sociological fabric. And here's how it's exhibited. And ultimately, the purpose is to elevate the soul. And if these parts of society are respected, it helps to elevate the soul.
Thank you very much.
Anything?
Thank you so much for really giving us very valuable instruction in how we can reach out to others and at the same time respect their values. I wanted to share that in the beginning of this semester, we put up a table and we wanted to see what how we can attract new students. And the moment they see the word yoga, they get like immediately attracted, because the way they connect is that, okay, yoga is all the asanas and the exercises.
Right.
And then later on, when they find that, okay, this form of yoga is different from what the conception that they were carrying, then they become a little discouraged. So I was wondering, like, whether we should, like, actively take such indirect route where we incorporate the other forms of yoga to somehow give them some facility so that they find some active way of expressing their...
Well, it's being done at the other college, and you see that there's... what the result of that is over time. One of the sessions in Washington was exactly this. And the discussion was on, you know, what is our interest? Is it simply a hook? Or, you know, if it is, that then it's disjunct. That was their view. And health is something that their argument was, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there are four divisions of the humans, life that must be all each in proper balance. So if we meet people on the health is their interest side, to have as a component of balance and it's not a ploy or disgenuine, but it's deliberately and genuinely connected to making a full balanced person. But you know, balance is incomplete without the spiritual component. So what I'm suggesting is, along those lines, if you're Prabhupada never encouraged this. It was popular during his time. So one could make an argument. We just give purity and people respect that. And that's the people that will attract people that respect purity. That's certainly a strategy that one could follow. And just to say that the other side a little bit more, during the course of that weekend, I'm forgetting the devotee's name. He lives in the Potomac area. He has his little place set up by the Air and Space Museum with his music. He was part of Krishna Fest. Very gentle, slender, American devotee. Anyways, he was sharing what it was like when he first started becoming interested in Krishna consciousness as a preaching center at a college, and Kalakanta was in charge, and there were a few devotees, Baladev Vidyabhusan and Praladananda Swami, and you know, they would talk to him about anything to do with spiritual subjects. And when it came to the other subjects that he was interested in, they just kind of lost interest in carrying on the conversation. They didn't like shut him down, but the message he got was that these persons are interested in higher levels of purity, and he respected that. And so he was expressing from this Building Bridges conference that all this talk about going to where people are and meeting them and being with them and serving them in that area as devotees, because we're carrying bhakti, then they'll come to the bhakti side with us because we've met them over there. So he's not so sure about that. So there's another, you know, the pizza, the pakora side. And the other is, okay, you could do that if you like, but you know, I'd like to add value and genuinely add value. This is a need that people feel. We'll do it. We'll serve that need, recognizing that this is a step from where they were towards Krishna. They just don't know the connection with Krishna. They have just this interest in a more natural, more healthy kind of a life. Let's serve them there and serve prasadam, and serve them in another way also, because we're carrying Krishna bhakti. We'll add the Krishna bhakti component and carry them to the next step if they want to know. Which is something similar to what Stamba did at Penn State. I forget what the name of his club was, but he called it sumptuous vegetarian cooking class. And it was all about the tongue. And, you know, healthy vegetarian at a time when vegetarian wasn't as common and popular as it is today. And on the Penn State campus, it was very popular. He had 150 people taking his cooking class. And, you know, many of them were there just because they prashad him afterwards, but they were there. And then they became friendly towards him, and then some stayed for the set part too. A lot of people left. But his reputation on campus wasn't, you know, this is a person that can't meet us. If this, you know, they're this arch conservative. So it added appreciation on campus, which then helped persons that may have been sincere not to have been dragged away by persons saying, oh, don't go to them, they're the arch conservative people. But, you know, but the other argument is, can also be made. I could think of some preachers, without naming names right now, that would never do this. They'd only do this and stand by it and be very successful. Because, you know, purity is the force. And, you know, read the message this way and not go that way. And be successful. Definitely one of the things that we don't want is to become like the Christian church. You know, where whatever the teaching is just gets lost in a bunch of mush of, you know, Catholic charities. We just do philanthropic things and things that people like, and the purity is lost. But we also want to be relevant and relatable and capture the youthful energy and like this comment, you know, of this, I'll just repeat, it's not directly on your question, but during Prabhupada's times it was counterculture people, with people that are dropping out. And the current trend is people dropping in. They want to make a change, they want to make things relevant and important to their lives and the value. So that's the wave. And concerns for health is part of that wave. And that's, you know, it feels good. Yoga feels good. It's good. And so they want to do it. They want to take part in it. So should we or shouldn't we give leadership to that wave and direct it toward Krishna? Depends on your expertise. And it also depends on your disposition. Prabhupada gave a phrase once, I assume it's of something from Bengali, but, you know, the art is to catch the fish without getting wet. As strict and conservative as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was, he told the sannyasis, you know, you go to England and even if you have to eat meat, which they didn't, but it, you know, the idea was, you know, in terms of compromising principles, the main thing is to bring them to Krishna. Whatever you have to do, bring them to Krishna. So there's that point of view even with Bhaktisiddhanta. There are others that say, you know, Prabhupada didn't do it. You never introduced any of this stuff, and you just stand by purity, and purity is the force. Others would say purity is there because you're being compassionate. We're not compromising. It's not against our principles of Krishna consciousness to do this. And it's not deception. It's not just a ploy, a marketing ploy to get people in our door. If you're genuinely caring about the balance of their well-being, but then connect that balance to the deeper purpose for which asanas and so forth is meant, the worthy authority. Those who know don't teach them, they'll never know. So that's the other side. Yeah, we're an hour and 20 minutes into the class, and I'll respond and then.
Okay. Or I can ask tomorrow.
Go quickly.
Guru Maharaj, this is a question and a comment, probably a little long one. Sometimes I feel that I don't have enough clarity about what's the ultimate objective of Lord Chaitanya's movement and what is the real desire of Lord Chaitanya and his followers. I'll try to clarify my question. From what I have heard and read about Lord Chaitanya and his followers, there is this very wonderful way of uniting people and bringing anyone and everyone from all backgrounds and bringing them towards Krishna, irrespective of what their cultural upbringing and all that. But at the same time, I see devotees, say, engaging in preaching or services where they try to coexist with what's already there. I would like to give an example. For example, while I was in Yogananda for a conference a couple of years back, there was this talk about multi-religious theology and presenting Krishna consciousness as one of the traditions, religious traditions, and trying to coexist with all the others and, you know, going along with the tide. But then there is also the other side, which I'm more familiar with, which is helping people see that Krishna consciousness is the uniting force where all traditions can flow like rivers and come.
Yeah.
So sometimes I struggle with this.
I wouldn't take part in the former one.
Hmm.
And wish it well from a distance. And hope those persons don't get wet. That's a short answer.
Okay.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
That's all.